Now, let's get the latest on the RHI inquiry. The News Letter's political editor, Sam McBride, with us this morning. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Before we get into RHI, I've noticed that you've been tweeting about a DUP meeting tomorrow. Tell us about that, Sam. What are you reporting?
This is a meeting of the party's MPs and MLAs. I think some other party members as well perhaps will be there. It's at the Seagull Hotel in just on the outskirts of Portadown. The party is very much saying that this is routine. They're saying that this is a meeting that has been called by Arlene Foster as part of, I suppose, a wider attempt by her to be less centralised than perhaps Peter Robinson was and Ian Paisley was. But I think given the pretty febrile atmosphere within the DUP at this point, and given what is clearly a degree of debate among senior figures as to whether Arlene Foster should stay as leader or leave, and given that the party conference is next month, at the end of next month, and that is really a watershed moment. You can't really change your leader a week after she has given a keynote speech and set out her stall for the next year. I think there is certainly the potential that that is quite a significant meeting, but it's no more clear than that at this point.
Well, why would it be significant? Are you saying this is a make or break meeting, or what is this, do you think?
I think this is a get-together for the party. That is something that is less common now because Stormont is not there. So generally you would have group meetings every week. You would have internal discussions, which largely are pretty routine, but can at points of strain become very robust and become very difficult for the leader. So the fact that those don't happen as often means that when they do happen, they are very significant. I know that over recent days there has been a lot of debate within the DUP, a lot of blunt speaking as to Arlene Foster's position, as to what has come out about SPAD.
To her or behind her back?
Well, certainly in her presence and in terms of what has come out of the RHI inquiry, that has been addressed head on by some people in the party. But I think that also there is a very significant element of the party who think that perhaps they should leave this, that really if there is going to be criticism of the party next year, which there certainly will be, and of Mrs. Foster, in the report from Sir Patrick Coughlan, it's better maybe just to leave her in place until that happens and then move against her at that point.
So just to be clear, Sam, because I've been away over the last week or so, are you saying that over recent days, senior members of the DUP have been telling Arlene Foster to her face about their unhappiness with her leadership?
They have certainly been expressing deep unhappiness at what has been coming out of the inquiry as to how the party is run, the revelations about advisers, the revelations about elements of the culture of the party. So not just her leadership, and I think that's the really significant thing here, because if the DUP change leader and somebody else comes in, but the key figures behind her, Timothy Johnston, etc., stay in place, that is much less significant than a really radical overhaul of how the party has operated for the last 15 years.
There's only one bit about that, Sam, to be fair to Arlene Foster, that I don't get about what you've said. The DUP, the senior people within the DUP, didn't need the RHI inquiry to tell them how the party was run. It's been well known for many years how that party runs.
There's an element of truth to that. I think there are people, even at relatively senior levels within the party, certainly MPs and MLAs, who did not know the full extent of what was going on. So I suppose they certainly knew that there was a centralised controlling system. They knew some of the allegations involved in that. But to actually have people from that system sit in front of the inquiry on oath and essentially admit that the way they acted broke the law, I mean, that is quite something. Even for somebody who believes that something's not quite right about it, they mightn't have known the ins and the outs of it and just how serious some of these practices were.
Let's come into the RHI inquiry then. Yesterday, the inquiry heard, Sam, that two DUP advisers withheld key information from officials about abuse of the scheme. That's the claim from Andrew McCormick, the senior civil servant, right?
That's right. And Andrew McCormick is a central figure here. He's the person who was in charge of the department at the point where the scheme was running out of control. So he was working very closely with these figures. He was really crucial to what was happening here. He alleges he gives his opinion that now that he looks at the evidence that the inquiry has gathered, particularly emails from Andrew Crawford, who is Arlene Foster's special advisor, to Timothy Kearns, who was then the special advisor in Dr. McCormick's department, Jonathan Bell's department. He says that it is now crystal clear to him that Andrew Crawford understood the perverse incentive, the burn to earn, the cash for ash element of this scheme, and he did not pass that on. So So he says that he actually goes further than that. He says that he withheld that information from the civil service. And he says that if he had given that to them, there's no guarantee that it would have stopped this, because the department failed repeatedly to pick up on this. But it might just have been the piece of the jigsaw that would have brought it to a head at that point.
And if Andrew Crawford knew, who did he tell, if anybody?
Well, it's clear from these emails that he told Timothy Kearns, and Timothy Kearns has said in his evidence that he then passed this on to another senior civil servant, albeit not in an explicit way where he said this has come from Andrew Crawford, but he did say that he had told Chris Stewart, that is Andrew McCormick's deputy, the undersecretary in the Derry department at that point. He says that he told him repeatedly about abuse, about allegations of abuse. Mr. Stewart agrees that he did tell him about allegations of abuse. He says he didn't tell him quite as frequently as Mr. Kearns now says was the case, but he says that it wasn't really very specific, and for that reason nothing was done about it, but something should have been done about it, even if it wasn't quite crystal clear as to what was happening.
Sam, just before I went away, I was watching the RHI Inquiry, and I was reading, like the anorak I am, some of the transcripts of what's been said over recent days and weeks. And essentially, you had some of the testimony, especially from Timothy Johnston, who is currently the chief executive of the DUP. He was, I think in his own admission now, a very senior SPAD within the DUP. You had a situation where he was essentially saying, look, you need to do things a certain way in Northern Ireland for things to work, for things to function. When you have this mandatory coalition, there's got to be maybe atypical ways of doing business in order for the DUP and Sinn Féin, two parties who don't agree on very much, to be able to function as a government. So to be fair to the DUP and to those special advisers, you have Sir Patrick Coughlan looking at the rules in a textbook, but of course Northern Ireland is never going to function in a textbook way, Sam, no matter what any inquiry uncovers.
That is certainly one aspect of this debate, if you like, and it's something which is much more live than that, because this morning in the last half hour, Andrew McCormick has been giving evidence about this, where he essentially backs up that element of what Timothy Johnston says and says effectively they did things to be, I mean, I'm paraphrasing him here, but he effectively says the DUP and Sinn Féin SPAD did things to keep the show on the road. They did those out of good intentions, even if they broke the rules. I think the difficulty as expressed by Patrick Coughlan is that you just cannot have a situation where it's okay to break rules. Either you have rules and you enforce them, or you don't have rules and you're quite clear as to what's happening. And the difficulty is that if you have a situation where people place themselves quite literally above the law and think that that's okay because there's some wider moral purpose to what they're doing, where does that end? I think it's a deeply unhealthy situation, and that is now accepted, I think, by most of these people when it's put to them in these stark terms at the inquiry.
And finally, Sam, but before you go today, the company, you work for the newsletter, you're the political editor for the newsletter. I see it's up for sale.
Yes, you're asking me about a diverse range of issues this morning. The newsletter has been owned by Johnston Press for a very long time, certainly for as long as I've been there. It's far above my pay grade, this stuff, but certainly there's an element of uncertainty in this. But the newsletter is a profitable paper. I don't think there's any concern as to the future of the paper. Certainly there isn't. And one thing to you say about Johnston Press as owners, journalists tend to grumble about their owners. There have been a lot of there have been a lot of staff cuts and a lot of budgetary cuts across pretty much all of the print media in the UK and Ireland over the last decade or so. But one thing that I have to say for them is that they have never tried to interfere in what I write politically. They have never tried to stop what I'm doing in terms of covering the RHI inquiry. And that's certainly something which I have valued and I think has been to the benefit of readers of the newsletter.
And you say the newsletter is profitable. Is that atypical of newspapers these days?
No, I think that the difficulty for newspapers is that profit margins are shrinking, but certainly papers which are still being printed, they're being printed by commercial organisations. If they weren't profitable, in almost every case, that would not be the case.
Here's a nightmare for you, Sam. Maybe we could break off the newsletter from the big group and I could get a few investors and I'll be your new boss. Just watch that space then.
That's a deeply unsettling prospect, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Sam McBride. See you all tomorrow. It's nice to be back. Bye-bye.